We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Let's roll. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Morenzi. The pimps, the players, the hustlers, the podcasters, the people that bust them, and everybody else in between. Let's do this thing as we kickstart a World Series week, MLS playoff a week, CFL playoffs a week. The bloodbaths continue in the college of football world. The SEC is not a very safe place to be if you're a head coach right now. We've got Monday night to football, anticlimactic at that, with the Kansas City Chiefs and the Washington Commanders without Jaden Daniels. World Series. Man, there's a lot of stuff going on. I was in attendance on Sunday, yesterday, at an MLS playoff game. The Vancouver Whitecaps have had a great year this year. They're the 2 seed in the Western Conference. They would have been the top seed, actually, if they didn't lose their final regular season game of the year, but they got red carded early in the game. They were a man down. They ended up losing 2-1 to Dallas, which I actually didn't think was a bad thing, actually. And I was sort of like, the Whitecaps hadn't lost since August the 9th. So, you know, it's been a little wake-up call and, you know, okay, let's, you know, were they really going to run the table, put it that way? Like, were they going to win every game and not lose all the way from August the 9th? So, it's not the end of the world, whatever, first or seventh, you know, second, seventh, whatever. You would have liked to avoid LAFC, but San Diego are good too. So there's a couple of really good teams. And for the record, listen, Vancouver are going to beat FC Dallas. They beat them 3-0 in the first game. They're going to win the series, but they're going to have to play LAFC after. And LAFC are the real deal. But if they get past LAFC, I think they can make it to the finals. San Diego would be a load to deal with, but maybe they would have to play them depending on what happens. But exciting times. They got over 32,000 people, which I think, you know, they say that they're publicly happy about. I would have wanted to see a little bit more. When you consider how good the Whitecaps are and, you know, how much the ownership and, like, they've really bent over backwards by bringing Mueller in and other guys in and the giveaways. And, like, put it this way, we already get 25,000. Like, there's basically, like, 25,000 diehard Whitecap fans that have been going to every game since Mueller's been here. And, like, you know, that's the crowd type of deal. So they got 32 yesterday. So they got an extra 7,000. I should note that the weather really sucked yesterday, and it was, like, bad. Like, it was dark and raining sideways. And so it was an ugly day. But I would have liked to seen 35-40 in the stadium. But nevertheless, Caps got it done. They were minus 275 favorites, man. So it was a hard game to bet. We just had to, like, put them in different parlays and stuff like that. We had Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love, Steelers, Packers. But the big story of the day, and let's bring in Mo Khan and Cam Stewart. Mo, we'll start off with you. Brian Kelly is out in Baton Rouge. You know, there was a lot of talk. Well, if they don't start winning, well, the patience had run thin. And there are reports that there was a meeting with the athletic director and the brass of LSU and Brian Kelly that went, like, got kind of, like, hostile. I guess this meeting was a pretty volatile meeting, and they ended up firing him at the end of the meeting when it was all said and done. So Brian Kelly is out, Mo.
Not surprised, guys. I mean, you know, coming into this year, I thought they would be a team that would be in the playoffs and not the Final Four. And they have crashed and burned dramatically. And I think, guys, if you go back from 2021 when he got hired, geography-wise, it was sort of like a not proper fit, right? Because, you know, in the movie, in Casino, De Niro's character, right, when he goes to Vegas and he meets that Vegas big hitter and he kind of snubs him, that's how it felt like with Kelly in Baton Rouge. Like, he just wasn't the right guy, didn't connect with the local community as well. I remember reading an article a couple of years ago in The Athletic where some players didn't even speak to him. His starting center didn't speak to him, right? It was just, hello, how are you type of thing here. And I just think the pressure mounted. Office didn't do well. And now, you know, Scott Woodward, the AD, who he got into an argument with on Sunday, he's got a big hire to make, guys. He's gone big-time home run, grand slam type of targets before in other sports. he's got to get this target higher properly corrected, because if he doesn't do it now, LSU might fall into the middle pack of the SEC and no longer be considered to be the top tier in that conference.
They already kind of are, right? They're not. They win every once in a while, but they're not top tier. Like, their record kind of is what it is. It, you know, you are what your record says you are on a yearly basis. You're right. I thought it was a weird hire when they hired him in the first place, because of just, you know, an East Coast sort of Midwest guy going into the South, dealing with the politics of it all. But the fact is, that really wasn't a problem, right? I mean, aside from his little fake Southern accent thing a couple of years ago.
That was the best, but, I guess.
Like, put it this way. Like, he didn't have problem getting players. Like, I actually thought, Mo, like what you said, like, I thought when he went there, I was like, man, these kids from the South aren't going to want to play for this guy. Right. Like, he's kind of he's a jerk. And the thing is, LSU is so big, like, kids from there want to play there. So, he didn't have a hard time recruiting, which was almost a problem for him, because, you know, if you have the players, then there's no excuse not to win after. Right. And yeah, he lost Underwood, but whatever. They had Nussmeier anyways. They had Jaden Daniels. So we can't say that, oh, he couldn't recruit players there. He got players there. He just couldn't win there. They are point blank. He wasn't winning with the players that he had. But quite a crazy journey from him saying that he doesn't think he can win at Notre Dame and get good enough players, to Notre Dame being as good as they are now.
Yep.
And with the players with Marcus Freeman. And it was never really the players at Notre Dame either. It was Kelly, Mo, right? It's Brian Kelly. He's a really good coach. Is he a great coach? Maybe not. Like,
he's a complicated coach. That's,
yeah,
what he is.
And the thing is, too, like you said, he wants complete control. And so he's not a very nice guy. He wants complete control. All right, so if you want to be an arrogant dictator, fine. But arrogant dictators better win, right? I mean, that's the bottom line. Like, if you're going to be like that guy and, oh, the coach runs everything and he's in complete control, you better win. And it just didn't win in Baton Rouge. And it'll be interesting to see where they go next now, because I brought this up on Saturday already to Brent Beard, who covers the SEC, Mo. There's more coaches getting fired than there's, like, people to replace them.
Yeah.
Like, there's not these saviors out there, right? Like, well, who's, like, you hear Lane Kiffin Lane Kiffin. Number one, Lane Kiffin has a job. Number two, I must be missing all the winning Lane Kiffin does at Ole Miss. Like, you know what I mean? So what, you think that, you know, Lane Kiffin's going to win at LSU if you bring him in there? Or, like, what's going to be different at Florida? Like, these teams, they're firing their coaches without knowing who they're going to hire after. And it's going to be a problem for them, Mo. Like, there's not enough coaches to hire for all these high-profile jobs that are available now.
You're right. And Kevin, Gabe, the problem is now, in this new NIL world, more and more programs are going to fire coaches rather quickly than long time. Remember back 20 years ago, you get 5-7 years to be at a program. Now the base minimum is 2-3 years tops if you don't produce in that three-year window. And with the way things are shaping up now, those blue bloods, those so-called blue bloods, are becoming now the average Joes, like the Floridas, like the Penn States, and maybe LSU might be in that equation as well. So if you are Scott Woodward, you have to have that guy in place, and you have to have that money in place, because if you're Lane Kiffin, he can max out whether he goes to Ole Miss, Florida, or LSU.
Why would you want Lane Kiffin? That's my point.
But that's the thing. That's the hot. I'm using that as the example, right? It could be Kenny Dillingham. It could be John Summerall down in Tulane. But they may not go in state and go to Tulane to get the coach, right? Because LSU and Florida fans are almost alike, guys. They almost think that they are Alabama, Georgia level of talent, which they are, but coaching wise, they're not. I just think now for LSU, for where they're at right now, they're going to pay $53 million to buy off Brian Kelly. You better hope that next guy you bring in is going to be able to win over the state and win over this program to say we're going to be up there again with the Bamas and the Miamis of the world, to be in that conversation as a perennial national champion every single year.
That's impossible to do, though.
That's how it is, though, in the SEC, guys. You guys know
impossible.
That.
It's impossible to be a perennial contender every year. Everybody knows it, right? People freak out when they're not and they have a couple of down years. Thing with LSU, You know, they've won. Every coach that was before had won a championship. But it was kind of the same thing. It was like Ed Orgeron won a championship, but the program was starting to fade right after. Like, it was fading. He won because of Joe Burrow, et cetera, right? And, you know, you got Jamar Chase, you got Joe Burrow. So he had the players, they had the system, and he was starting to fade after. You know, it was the same thing with Miles. They didn't like him anymore, right? He had won, and, you know, they were getting angry after. Saban was, you know, Saban won, but Saban split. So Saban didn't really give him a chance to turn on him. That's the thing. Even if you win, they'll turn on you, right? But yeah, they go big, or they go, you know, LSU have the money. They throw it around. But as I stated, all right, Penn State, who are you hiring? Okay, bad. All right, LSU, who are you going to hire? All right, Florida. And like this Lane Kiffin stuff. It's like, all right, let's bend over backwards to hire a coach that's been everywhere and's never won before. Okay. Like, I don't. Yeah, Lane Kiffin's a good coach. I don't have a beef with hiring for a program, but like this savior stuff, like, he's been around, guys. I mean, and he has money at Mississippi. Like, Mississippi have as much money as anyone else do. They're throwing around massive NIL thing. Like, that's another example. It's not like Kiffin doesn't have the players to compete, right? I mean, he's got players at Mississippi. But, you know, the whole thing is just kind of a turnoff. Like, they're all dirtballs, the coaches, the universities. And then these schools turn around and they don't have any money for, like, real things, but they're paying coaches off $52 million to leave. You know, college, man, this stuff is just, it's absolutely, yeah, it's just become a monster of money and of ill will, essentially. But it's amazing, though, man, that Kelly, like, from these TV, like the SEC Netflix show, to Kelly laughing it up, drinking wine at home, to being fired, man, it's a cold world. But if you're a coach, you get hired to get fired. Right, man, just point blank, you're hired to be fired. And they just didn't win enough football games. So speaking of winning football games, a quick check at the top 25 right now. Ohio State, all they do is win. Indiana, super impressive season. Indiana just murdering people. Texas A&M, get it done and get Brian Kelly fired. Alabama are now sitting in the 4 spot. Georgia are ranked 5th. Oregon, 6th. Ole Miss, 7. Georgia Tech, 8. Not getting a lot of love, Georgia Tech, despite being undefeated. Vanderbilt, Miami, BYU, Notre Dame, Texas Tech, Tennessee, Virginia, Louisville, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, Missouri, Texas. You know, my Michigan Wolverines really are not getting a lot of love from the voters this year. 21, okay. But whatever. You know, you got to keep on winning football games, and it doesn't matter when it's all said and done. But what do you think about the picture right now, Mo, in the college football world at the top here?
Look, I think Ohio State has the least amount of question marks right now, guys, right? But it's such a week-by-week situation with how things are going to go forward here that we could talk about Oregon, we could talk about Ohio State, Indiana. Texas A&M is now the hottest property in college football for what they did on national TV. Is Alabama, you know, they had a wonky game on the weekend and pull it out. Are they a contender or a pretender? I think these next 2 weeks, we'll see a trap game upset happen at some point here. It could happen with Indiana. You know, they got Maryland coming up, I think, this week, and they got Penn State next week. That could be a trap game for them, and they might drop down a couple of spots here. But the team I'm intrigued by, though, guys, mostly is BYU. I think BYU, I'm not saying they're going to win it, but I think they're going to be in that Big 12 conversation at the end of it because of how they've been playing so well, and they're getting more national eyeball TV games to work with. So that's going to help build their momentum going towards the month of November and being that playoff race towards the end of the year.
Gabe, we'll give our guest a lot of credit when he came on, Tommy Lorenzo, because I know we liked Iowa State, and we'll be honest. And BYU just didn't go away in that game. Iowa State punched him in the face. And that's the thing about the Cougars that I really, really respect is there's no, like, quitting this team. They just come back and punch you back. And they got a lot of guys who make big plays on that team. Very impressive win going into Iowa State. And they were down pretty big early in that game, and they came back and kicked their ass in the second half. Kudos to the Cougars.
Yeah, BYU have not gotten any respect all year. They're underdogs all the time. Nobody believes in them. People say, oh, they don't do anything well. Their offense this or that. But they just find ways. I mean, they were down 17-7. Iowa State sort of had them on the ropes. Not the ropes. I mean, it was the second quarter. But it was 17-7. BYU were not playing well. And Iowa State, the stadium was rocking. The Cyclones were rocking. The Cyclones were playing well. And the Cyclones were up 17-7. They were moving the football, and they threw an interception. Boom. BYU picked it off. And it's just like every time I've watched almost every BYU game this year, like every time BYU are on the ropes, they find a way. Like, you know what I mean? They create a turnover. They score a touchdown. They get a big stop. Like, they really just sort of find a way. They're very positive too on the sidelines. Like, it's not like a negative, like their coach is like one of the players almost. Like, the players, the coach celebrates with the players after the turnovers, and he's all fired up after a big tackle, the coach. Like, they're a fun team, BYU. And it's strange because they're not that good, but they keep finding ways to win football games, and it's all that matters. But if you look this week, you got SMU and Miami are playing each other. So that's a big-time football game. And I hate to say it, Mo, as far as Ohio State is concerned. I don't know. I don't see who could beat them. Like, the only team.
Texas A&M?
No, I think the only team that can beat Ohio State is Michigan. And not
the kryptonite, yeah.
Yeah, not because, oh, Michigan's even, like, better than Texas A&M or these other teams. They're not. But it's just one of those deals that it's proven. I mean, they've beaten them 4 years in a row, right? And Ohio State were better all four times. So, like, or I'd say no, three of the times Ohio State were better. One of the years Michigan was like, you know, I'm just saying, like, Michigan are in Ohio State's head. Like, they can't dispute it. They know it. We know it. So I don't think they're going to stumble. I mean, they get Penn State this week in the game that was supposed to be the one, right?
Yeah.
Not anymore, evidently. But they're just so damn good. But as far as, like, you know, the big games this week, got Miami and SMU. Penn State, Ohio State, Vanderbilt, and Texas. Speaking of wheels falling off, the wheels have fallen off for the Texas Longhorns. Houston Cougars flying under the radar, actually. Cougars host West Virginia. You got the cocktail party game with Georgia and Florida this week. Indiana, oh, Maryland. It's not really a great college week this week. Oklahoma, Tennessee, USC, Nebraska. So there's been better college weeks so far. We could say that. As far as the National Football League is concerned, pretty, you know, nothing like, you know, shocking. Yesterday, the Miami Dolphins finally win a football game. So I guess that's almost shocking. The Bills drilled the Panthers, which I kind of expected them to. Normally, I don't like laying points, but I thought the Bills were going to roll. The Patriots keep on doing their thing. The Eagles got revenge on the Giants. The Jets put up a bunch of points and score and beat the Bengals 39-38. Broncos win. What was the game, Mo? What was the storyline in the NFL this week that catches your eye? I guess, you know, the biggest game, biggest storyline would really be that the Packers beat the Steelers.
Yeah.
And Love, you know, beats Aaron Rodgers. Colts win again. Patriots win again. But pretty anticlimactic week for the most part.
I'll tell you one game that I was circling in lead up to Sunday was, and it had a big impact for gamblers, was Bears Ravens. This was an opportunity for the Bears to kind of cement their name that, hey, you know what? We go on the road, we beat Baltimore, whether they're healthy or not, to go 5-2. They're now 4-3. They skunked that game, guys, pretty much, right? I thought that was a great opportunity for Caleb Williams to get a quality road win in an environment like Baltimore, whether they have what they have. And I thought that was disappointing for the Bears. And if you're a Bears fan, I'm not saying they're going to go 12-5 here, but that was a game that would have really jumped board the momentum and confidence going into November, that maybe they could be a wild card team and maybe have that conversation that they can compete with Green Bay and Detroit for the NFC North. But I think that was a bad loss for the Bears when it's all said and done.
How'd you do, Cameron, in the NFL?
Great, Gabe, and I got smoked in the college afternoon because I was on Iowa State. Toledo was a horrible pick, and things got really better Saturday night in the NFL. I actually took the Jets, so that was fun to take them live too. But I will say this to Mo's point, like, Gabe, we've known this for a long time. The Bears are the Bears and the Falcons are the Falcons. Kirk Cousins, he can't move out there, and the Falcons are the worst favorite. They've been that way for a long time. Didn't think Miami could win this game outright, but just a horrible loss for Atlanta. We wait for them to get better, and they can't get over the hump, and the Bears aren't that good. It's one of those situations where, sure, they won a few games in a row, but Detroit is significantly better than them. Proud of your Bills, Gabe. They came in and finally, you know, punched somebody in the face. They hit Dalton a lot in that game. It was nice to see. The Bills playing better. Hope they can do it against Kansas City. But you're right. A lot of favorites this week and a lot of things, you know, very impressed with Jordan Love as well. And Kraft, the tight end, was absolutely a monster on National Tight End Day. He was a one-man gang in that game. Nice to see the Green Bay Packers in the second half destroy the Steelers.
Yeah, Kraft was a real load last night. I thought the Bills would handle the Panthers. Yeah. The Bills were coming off a bye week, so they had weeks to prepare for this game and tighten things up. And it sounds like it was a pretty intense sort of couple of weeks around the Bills. You know, in the past, like, they've had these little – they always do this. They've always had these little stumbles in the regular season. And yet it's very, don't worry about it. Everything's fine. What are you panicked about? This was different. This was – no, we're going to have a reevaluate. Like, they almost had like a mini training camp again.
Yep.
Like McDermott said, Mo, that, you know what? We went back and we looked at everything.
Right.
Like, we literally looked at everything, like running, passing, offense, defense, tackling, players, coaching. Like, basically, is it the scheme? Is it, what are we doing? Like, he basically said, we analyzed everything. And he goes, we analyzed everything brutally, honestly, and to try to identify, like, what are we not doing? Is it the preparation? Is it, like, and, you know, listen, beating the Panthers, they're whatever, doesn't mean everything's great. And it also doesn't mean that everything was terrible before either, right? But I like that the Bills, they want to put these fires out before they start. I think McDermott sees all these college coaches getting fired and knows, too, that, like, I've got to win, right? So... okay, you beat Carolina. Now the big test is this week, Mo, with the Kansas City Chiefs. The Bills are underdogs, too. The Chiefs are 1.5-point favorites in Buffalo.
Yeah, not only that, though, guys. They got the Chiefs at Miami, home to Tampa. That three-game set will tell us where Buffalo is, because we talked about the schedule beforehand. Not many big heavyweights on that schedule, maybe New England after that loss. But we'll know. And that, I'm not surprised by that point spread line, guys, of how KC's favored to win this game. I think Kansas City right now, less question marks going week by week. Remember, week one, week two, we're saying, is this team for real? Are they going to be pretenders? But now that defense is playing better. Mahomes is playing at an MVP level. It's going to be on the Buffalo Bills defense line, guys, to win this football game. They have to get Mahomes off his comfort level here and make him a little bit twitchy out there. If they don't get to him, I'm not saying it's going to be a romp, but I think the Chiefs definitely can win this game against Buffalo in Buffalo.
They with the Bills, it's not so much even how they look or whatnot. It's just the fact that the Patriots are good, and the Patriots are winning games. So, like, the Bills are in a division battle right now. I mean, as it is now, they're not in first place. So, you know, they just got to keep plugging along here. I like to see them just sort of start to play better and address things. Like, the Bills weren't playing very good football earlier in the year, so...
The thing is, Gabe, Carolina's run defense was actually good, and James Cook and that offensive line dominated them. Like, that was a performance for the ages in the first half. He absolutely, like, 12 yards a carry, busting big holes. Like, that's the thing about the Buffalo Bills. They have that line. Like, you just want them to put a 60-minute game together. Like, you know what I mean? And they knew what
Dalton was doing. Last game, Cam, they did that. They do this, and Cook doesn't get the ball after.
Yeah.
So, play calling has been a problem with the Bills this year.
Good call. I agree.
Like, just point blank. And it's a weird deal, though. It's one of those, listen, Josh Allen's our star, but it's like, and I've said this for, like, basically 2 years now. I'm like, James Cook's one of the best running backs in the league. People 100%. Don't realize it, but, like, he's literally, like, you know, he's up there with Gibbs and stuff. Like, he's really good. And they don't get him the ball enough. And remember, Mo, in the playoffs? In the playoffs last year, guys, he was killing it, and they just stopped giving him the ball.
The second half.
Yeah, it's almost loss, like, well, Josh Allen is our guy. It's like, yeah, he is our guy, but right now Cook is the guy. So, and even Josh isn't going to get upset. Just let's make Cook the star here. Like, seriously, like, we'll run the offense. We're running the ball. Run the offense through Cook. And they do it, and then they sort of back off it. And it's like, I think they need to address this and just say, listen, Cook's our guy. We're going to run the ball 20 times a game. And it'll make Josh even harder to stop, too, because teams are going to not really know. They're going to be like, damn, these guys are running a lot now. And now suddenly, boom, you got Josh rolling out on us. So I think there's some things that the Bills could do with it. So, yeah, you know, we'll see what happens against the Kansas City Chiefs. But suddenly it's like the Chiefs aren't even the problem. It's the freaking Patriots that are a problem for the Buffalo Bills. Sunday night football, KBR Seahawks are on Sunday night next week against the Commanders in Washington.
Yeah, I'm praying that, you know, that Jaden Daniels doesn't come back. Seahawks laying three. Been really proud of this team, Renzi. I know they get a lot of grief on the offensive line, but the Zabel pick's been good, keeping Sam Darnold outright. JSN's been a revolution. And the thing is, I'm really proud of the defense. They've had all defensive starters out. Witherspoon, one of the best in the league, was out. All they do, Gabe, you saw what they did to the Houston Texans, too, who absolutely mauled San Francisco. Stroud was on his ass and the whole game. Bang, bang, bang. This McDonald defense has really been good. Proud of this team, Gabe. People thought they were going to suck, and right now I think they can win the division. Very, very happy.
CFL football playoffs set to begin Saturday, November the 1st. And great, you know, the CFL, they don't do everything perfect, but this was a smart move that they did a couple of years ago when they moved the playoff games to Saturday instead of Sunday, going head-to-head with the National Football League. Grey Cup is obviously still on Sunday, but the playoff games are on Saturday. And then they moved the games up an hour each this Saturday because it could potentially be a game seven in the World Series. Now, if there's not a game seven, the times are set.
That's
so,
right.
So, like, they moved them up an hour, and they're moving up an hour no matter what happens due to, you know, they didn't want to go head-to-head with a Toronto Blue Jay game seven. So the game in Montreal now starts at 2 o'clock Eastern, and the game in Vancouver starts at 5:30 Eastern. So the Montreal Alouettes will host the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. The winner will go to Hamilton, and Calgary visit BC to take the Lions on while the Rough Riders await the winner. The Montreal Alouettes are 4.5-point favorites over the visiting Blue Bombers. The total is 49.5. Davis Alexander has still not lost a game as a starter in the CFL. I like the Montreal Alouettes in this game. I think they'll cover the 4.5 as well. It's, you know, it's not that many points, and I get it. You got the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, but this isn't the same Winnipeg past. This isn't the Bombers of past. Father Time has finally caught up to this football team. They're still good, but they're not great. I think the Alouettes will win by a touchdown. Like, I'm not in love with laying points in a playoff game like this, but I think Montreal are going to win. And then secondly, yeah, I think Montreal can win by five or more. What do you think, Mo?
I do like Montreal a lot, but they're banged up, guys. I think they suffered three or four injuries to their starting defense and offense from Saturday's loss to Winnipeg. And Mustafa Johnson's a key guy that no one knows about, right? Like, he's been out for most of the year, got banged up. He may or may not play. We'll find out this week at practice. But, you know, Gabe, you brought up a good point, though, right? Davis Alexander has yet to lose a football game in his career at the CFL level. I'm not saying it's going to happen this week, but if you look at Jordan Younger, the DC of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, he can come up with a good game plan. And Winnipeg's had great success going up against Montreal in Montreal, and the reason why, they run the ball. And Montreal isn't the best run defense in the CFL here. So if they get that ground game going forward here with Oliveira and others coming in for carries, that could be the reason why Winnipeg keeps this game very close going into the fourth quarter. But nonetheless, though, I still think Montreal does win this football game, and they do cover the point spread.
What's your pick, Cam? Winnipeg and Montreal?
Freeze a crowd. I'm on Montreal. I think they'll find a way to get it done. Didn't expect Wilson as a third-string quarterback to get it done there, Morency. I remember him at Kentucky. He had his numbers at Kentucky were staggering. Hey, for only quarterback, not even 1,000 yards rushing, 3,000 passing. I remember that guy. I like Montreal. I think they're at home. They'll get it done. That spread, though, right around the number. I think Montreal is probably going to win the game by around 6 points. Like, I think it's going to be pretty close, and Montreal just gets the cover in the game. Looking at the under, maybe, too, instead of the over in this football game. Lots of ground attack.
The BC Lions host the Calgary Stampeders. So we got Vernon Adams versus Nate Rourke in a playoff game. BC, man, it took BC, like, they had to dig down deep to beat a Rider team, which the Riders played their starters in the first half. And I was somewhat surprised by that. Yet they said that they wanted to keep them going. Yet BC had like a seriously hard time dealing with the Riders like all game in this game. And, you know, sort of like I said earlier about Michigan and Ohio State, there's certain matchups and just certain teams that, you know, it's kind of just always the same. And BC just do not match up well with the Rough Riders, man. Like, they won the game, but, you know, it took everything that they had to beat their backups. BC can't stop the run. Just point blank. Like, it's the one little thing that, and like, that's why there's only really two teams in the CFL that beat BC. the Blue Bomber. Yeah, the Blue Bombers and the Rough Riders. Mm-hmm. With Olivier and Ouellette, like the two teams that just run the ball down your throat, the BC Lions can't deal with it. They, you know, not many can, but they really, like, have a hard time with it. Everyone else, you'll notice BC beat. They put up a bunch of points on, or they stop, or they'll sack you and stuff. Like, if you throw the ball, BC have a good defensive line. So, like, Betts is good. He's, you know, the guy's like 9 sacks in the last 3 games, whatever. Like, they'll get to you. BC secondary is pretty flashy, and they're pretty good. Like, the secondary is good. They can't stop the run, like, just point blank. But Calgary don't really run the ball. So, I think it's a winnable game for BC. For BC, 4.5. What's your pick, Mo, for the Stampeders and the Lions?
What's the total in this game? I didn't get the total number.
You like the 3.5?
Yeah.
No, like, I'll say this, guys. BC's
There should be points. Yeah, guys.
Oh, big time. Big time.
There should be points. But remember, BC's history of recent time in the West playoffs, they've always been the road team, whether it's a semifinal game, whatever it is, right? They don't play well outdoors, but they get this game at home. And I think now the way it was, you brought up some good points, Gabe, how they kind of wheezed by Saskatchewan on Saturday. The thing is, this is a huge referendum on the BC Lions, guys. You know, you don't want to put a lot of investment to this team, the product, to become what he wants to be, a Grey Cup champion here. They've had their highs. They had their very lows in the summertime months here. But what the key will be for this team is, you're right, Gabe, can that run defense play better than what they have? Because Calgary does have a decent run game to work with. It's going to be less Vernon Adams, but more of a bounce attack that can win Calgary the game. But I think BC has the edge. They do play Saskatchewan in 2 weeks' time in Regina.
BC have pretty much owned Calgary, too, this year. Like I said, BC are good. I mean, BC are really good. They're just – they can't stop the run. So, like, if you get it going on them, then they've got a problem. But they're only going to have to deal with the Riders. It's just the Riders are like their kryptonite. And the Riders haven't really played great football down the stretch either, to be honest with you. What's your pick, Cam? Calgary and BC?
BC, I like the over as well. Take a look at the last two games. BC, they put up 52 on Calgary, gave 75 total points, and then a 62 on October 4th. So I expect this game to be fireworks points. I like BC Lions, and I like the over. I expect points in this game. Even though Calgary will try to establish a run game, BC is going to be chucking it all over the lot. So I think we got BC and the over, Morenci.
As far as futures are concerned, the Rough Riders are plus 250 to win the championship. Hamilton are plus 330. Montreal are plus 330. BC are plus 360. Calgary are plus 650. Winnipeg are 12-1. What's your Grey Cup prediction, Mo? Who's going to be playing in the Grey Cup, in your opinion?
Well, I told the CFL guy the other day, I think the winner of Winnipeg-Montreal goes to the Grey Cup. I don't think Hamilton has the ability to keep up with these teams here. I know Hamilton's going to have to buy and get ready for Montreal-Winnipeg next weekend here. But I'm more confident in either Winnipeg or Montreal. I think it will be Montreal that will win the Grey Cup, and they'll play Sask in the Grey Cup in 2 weeks' time. We'll have that rematch from 2009 and 2010 when we had those great classics that happened in Calgary and Edmonton, respectively.
Who do you got in the Grey Cup, Kim?
We were at that game, Gabe. Remember that one. I'm going to take the BC Lions, your BC Lions, to face the Montreal Alouettes. That's what I'm going to say. BC will find a way. I know Saskatchewan kind of like beats up BC, but I think they'll find a way to get it done. BC Lions versus Montreal in the Grey Cup, please.
And a side note, Cam, to that point, right, that was the last Grey Cup between the two teams that played in Winnipeg in 2006, which BC won. Dave Dickinson was the quarterback at the time.
I would yes. – Nice reference, Mo, but I'm not sure what it has to do with anything.
Oh, we like history. History with Mo.
Full circle. Didn't do with the game, but okay.
Dave Dickinson, yeah.
You know, Joe Barnes was the quarterback, guys, of the Alouettes.
Yes, yes. That was awesome. History lesson.
But I'll say, and I don't, you know, I'd like for it to be BC, but I'm going to say it's going to be the Rough Riders and the Alouettes as well. Rough Riders, Alouettes, and I say the Alouettes win the Grey Cup.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that's my early call. Listen, I thought it was going to be Montreal, or like depending on the crossover, what happened, but it's not the crossover. So I think, you know what, Mo? I think Hamilton could beat Winnipeg, but I think Montreal would beat Hamilton.
Yeah, I agree.
And then after, it's like, okay, BC goes to Saskatchewan. They could beat them. It's not like they can't.
Exactly.
But history hasn't been kind to them. Like, the deck is stacked, and, you know, the Riders just they're gonna run the ball down the Lions' throat. They just are. And a little bit of play. And they can throw the ball, too. It's all just the Riders just run. They can throw it. So I just think it's going to be tough for the BC Lions to pull this off and get to the Grey Cup. So I'll say Saskatchewan versus Montreal, with Montreal as the winner. So speaking of Montreal, Canadians did the Canadian swing, and not bad, Mo. They took 2 of 3. Every game was close, right? But every, you know, they get a one goal win, 2 1-goal wins, and a 1-goal loss on the road trip.
Yeah, and they go to Seattle on Tuesday, right? So they got one more West Coast trip. But if you look at the trends now with the Canadiens guys, aside from the game against Vancouver on Saturday, 4 of their wins have come with 15 seconds left in the game or in overtime. So, you know, and the loss to Edmonton was a thriller if you're neutral. But I just think now the biggest question mark for the Montreal Canadiens will be the goaltending. We talked about it last week, guys, with Montembeau and Dobish, who could be the number one guy for them. I think more and more fans here are a little bit...
Dobish has started to take over the job.
Exactly. Yes. Dobish is gaining more confidence day by day, but also the fan base is now clamoring for Dobish to be the number one guy. But the thing is, guys, when you look at this core group right now, and who knows what's going to happen, still a long way from April when playoffs begin, if they're healthy, are they going to be confident in either of these goaltenders to be the number one guy? Because some think they might go beyond 2 rounds and maybe go 3 rounds deep in the spring playoffs come that time of the year.
I think Dobis, it's sort of like the coaches, though, Mo, when people always talk about that in college. All right, oh, goalie, maybe they get, like, okay, who are you going to get? Like, who's the goalie out there? Like, who, there are no saviors out there with goalies.
Mm-hmm.
If there was, the Edmonton Oilers already would have done it, right? Like, there's no, oh, yeah, let's trade for this guy, and he's going to put us over the top guy. I think Dobish eventually – listen, Montembeau's good. Montembeau's just struggling a little bit to start the
year. Dobish's numbers are unreal, Gabe. 5-0, 940 save percentage, 1.77 goals against. The guy's amazing. Like, he's playing great.
But as far as the big picture is concerned, I think they're just hoping that is Fowler, Mo.
Yeah, like, in a year or two. Yeah, he's not ready yet.
Yeah, but neither are they. Like, it's not like the Canadiens are a cup contender right now. So,
no, like, but Gabe, just like LSU fans and Florida fans, have fans are just at that level of senile that they believe they can win a cup this year and start a 10-year run of dominance like the 70s were.
That's not happening.
No. No.
Been a nice start for the season for them, but like they're winning, like you said, Mo, they're winning a bunch of 1-goal games. It could go either way. Like, they get a lot of these games. I'm watching all these games. They could easily go the other way. They could easily lose. Yeah, they're good. But Dobish is fine. I think Dobish will end up sort of winning the one job as they go along here. It's still a little mini battle going on here, but I think Dobish will eventually be the guy, and they'll be right there. There's real no, you know. I mean, maybe if the Vancouver Canucks traded Demko is a good, really good goalie, but they just signed him, and I don't think they're going to trade him personally. So. There's real no savior for them out there. Now, as far as the Canucks are concerned, it is kind of just is what it is. The Canucks are a 500 team, point blank. Like, the Canucks literally win a game, lose a game, lose a game, win a game. Like, they're literally just, they're the definition of a 500 hockey team right now, but their schedule's been kind of tough. So I think, you know what, you know, things can sort of settle down and they could put together a couple of wins, but if you look at the Canucks, they played 10 games. They've won 5 of them. They've lost 5 of them. They've scored 29 goals. They've given up 31 goals. So they're being outscored by 2 goals only on the season. You look at the Montreal Canadiens. The Canadiens are 7-3 right now, but they only have a differential of +6. Like, they're not, you know what I mean? That's, if there's the one thing I've noticed in the NHL this year, there's a hell of a lot of 1-goal games, man.
Yeah,
like there's just a lot of really could go either way type of games. You know, like, all you need to know, like, look at the results and look at teams like goal differential and margin and stuff. The one team that's just rolling everybody, the New Jersey Devils. The Devils are 8-1 and they've scored 35 goals on the season through 9 games. Man, that's unbelievable.
It is. And they beat Colorado too, Gabe, and to extend that winning streak. To your point, take a look at Sunday's results. Tampa Bay, Vegas, overtime. Vancouver beats Edmonton in overtime. San Jose over Minnesota, overtime. No, it's just crazy. Like, all these +1.5. We talked about it with the Blackhawks. It's happening all the time.
But also, watch out for Carolina, guys. You know, I watched, awesome. Watch that game against the Avalanche with a cool retro look. I know, Gabe, you're not a big fan of the Nordiques look being rocked by the Avalanche here, but I will say this, though. The Hurricanes really intrigue me. And you know how these guys are. They're going to be aggressive in the trade market, get one more player in there. they could be the team to be watch out for as
they're that one team that it's almost like every year now. Like they've become the Buffalo Bills essentially. It's like, yeah, okay, you guys could do this and do that. You got to do it in the playoffs. And they just don't do it in the playoffs. Right? It's like they don't have that next level because they're so good in the regular season. But you're right. I mean, they're super aggressive. They have money. Players don't really want to fully play there because of the system, right? We've seen a couple of goal-scoring star type guys not want to re-sign or stay because of Brind'Amour's style that they play. But I don't disagree. They're freaking good. And it might be, you know, they could be the best team in the East. But, you know, the Devils are super fast, man. Like, the Devils, you're just so – they play fast. They skate fast. Utah, I'll give credit to Utah. Utah acquired 8-2 on the season.
They're good.
To start the year. And we got the World Series. So, the World Series, we're now tied at 1. It's amazing how people overreact after one game in each series all the time. In which the Blue Jay fans and, like, I think Blue Jay fans literally thought they were going to win the World Series after beating the Dodgers in game one. And a lot of Dodger fans were, like, seriously down. Like, oh, yeah, it's done. They suck. And, you know, they can't hit and this. Like, people flip out. And now after another game, like, the Dodger fans all feel happy again. The Blue Jay fans are all nervous again. But that's it. I get it. It's the playoffs. I mean, I'm pretty good at not panicking about, like, after losses in the playoffs.
We talked about it, Gabe, how the Jays fans were getting cocky. It's one damn game. You're playing the LA Dodgers. Like, Yamamoto. Yeah, like,
we don't need you. Yeah,
exactly. Like, shut up. Right? Like, that's the whole thing. Like, I get everyone in Toronto. Like, you know what I mean? We're here or whatever. You want to play that card? It's just don't poke the bear, man. The Dodgers are a great baseball team. And, Gabe, we talked about it. You think the Blue Jays are going to roll these guys? There's a reason why the Dodgers are the best team in baseball. I'm just hoping the Jays can grind with these guys. And the problem is, I look at Yamamoto, he's going to get another start. And that's a real big problem when this guy has so many damn pitches. You don't know what's coming. Dodgers offense, key hits in that game. It was close in game two, but now they're at home and some really good pitchers to come.
Well, Glasnow on the hill against Max Scherzer on Monday night. Max Scherzer was a Dodger. And in fact, I'm pretty sure I was at the last game that Max Scherzer pitched. If you guys remember, I went to the playoff game a couple of years ago. It was San Francisco, the Giants. And the Dodgers and Giants had to play in the playoffs in forever, so I want to be there. And it was a 1-0 game. It was like the win game. And the Giants beat the Dodgers 1-0. They hit a home run in the first inning off of Scherzer, and nothing since. But Scherzer, like, he didn't leave the Dodgers on the best terms, basically. Like, during that playoff run, as they were going on, Scherzer said he couldn't pitch. Like, he kept on saying, I need another day, or my arm, this or that. And Walker Buehler, like, kept on stepping in for him. And Walker Buehler, like, basically, he killed his arm. Like, Walker Buehler is a big game, like, a big, like, big team guy. Like, Buehler was like, yeah, give me the ball, I'm good. Give me the ball. So, Scherzer really didn't pitch. And a thing, you know, I think the Dodgers' thought process was, you know, he's a free agent. Like, he's basically more worried about, like, next year's free agency in his arm than he is, like, for us right now. Which, fine. Okay, it is what it is. But, like I said, I don't think there's a lot of, like, I don't think there's going to be a lot of hugs, like, with him type stuff tonight when he sees the players. I'm not saying they hate each other, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of hugs going on here. You know, listen, everybody was wondering about Scherzer against when he started against Seattle. I had faith in him and thought he was going to pitch well. That was at home. That was against Seattle. This is a little bit different. You're Dodger Stadium now. I think the Dodgers could be able to get to Scherzer tonight, Cam.
Yeah, I'm worried about it too. Like, Scherzer, you know,
him on a short leash, but I think they could hit him.
Yeah, and they can get to him early too. Scherzer did pitch better, but this is the Dodgers. They know Scherzer too. I think it's a very dangerous game. Total's 8, Gabe. I would not be surprised if, like, the Dodgers got to Scherzer and then the Blue Jays would have to come back.
8.5 now.
No, update. Yeah. I got an 8 flat, but yeah, 8.5. Good call. I'd really worry. We talked about Scherzer. He made it, like, through multiple innings before. I would not be shocked if he's done after one or two innings.
The Dodgers are -200 favorites. Yikes. On Monday night. All right, we'll wrap things up. Mo, next Saturday, you're doing a little bit of everything. Huh? You're a busy man. You're going to be you're doing soccer, sideline soccer, CFL play game statistician, and then play-by-play college football later today.
Jack of all trades.
Yeah, we're going to have to really map out, and Damon Cam, you know, Montreal very well. It's a construction hell zone right now. So I might have to use a chopper to go from point A to point B to point C to get to get there in time here. So it's gonna be fun. Look, Montreal's gonna be is gonna be a fun time this weekend. Senators, Habs, Saturday night, Al's Bombers, 3 o'clock, and the Roses play AFC Toronto in the NSL first leg of the semifinal. As the second leg will happen next week in Toronto. We'll know who the two finalists will be for Grey Cup weekend. We'll play on the Saturday of Grey Cup weekend for the finals in Toronto.
That makes more sense, the leg stuff. I don't like this MLS best of three. It's dumb.
I agree.
It's going to drag out for weeks. There's no need for it. And if anything, like even Mueller said, like Thomas Mueller, legend, and they figured he would think the best of three is stupid, right? Because, you know, the soccer, they don't do that in Europe. And they asked him about it, and he said, he goes, no. He goes, you know, I'm a big Mueller's like a big North American sports fan. I didn't really realize it. Like, so he said, no, I'm. I've always, you know, I goes, I've always followed North American sports, and I always know you guys like the series is here. And he goes, but what I don't understand is why would you do the series in the first round and then the elimination game after?
Exactly, Gabe. It's like, opposite. That's what Mueller, elimination then series.
Like Mueller was just like, I don't. He goes, you know, he said the rest of the round should be a series, but I don't even think it should be a series, Mo. I think it should be like the, I don't know why we just don't do the aggregate stuff. Like they want to be different. Just do the two games. We don't need three. Like no one wants to see the Whitecaps and FC Dallas play 3 weeks in a row, man. Like no, it's ridiculous.
That's the history though of MLS, right? Remember when they first came in the '90s? They had that run, the takeoff penalty kicks, right? Where
you know what it is, Mo? It's money, bro. It's just pointless. They wanted each team that made the playoffs, they wanted to reward like the home base with a playoff game.
Of course. That's always point blank. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, it wasn't, you shouldn't do that. Like, it is what it is. If you know what I mean? If you get the host, you get the host. If you don't, you don't. Like, you know what I mean? But, or if you're going to do it, for the love of God, don't make us go through it three times. Like, Vancouver and Dallas played each other in the final week of the regular season. Like, they literally could play each other four games in a row.
And that kills the vibe. That
yeah, kills you. It kills the vibe. Like the fans, what, you want us to go and see the same team every week? Like, you know what I mean? Like, no. Yeah. Like, the next time they play should be against LAFC, but it's going to be like, hopefully they just handle Dallas on the road. And another thing is, too, the game should be on Wednesday. Like, this thing stretches out 3 weeks. Like, honestly, like, it could be done in a week. You should say, all right, we're playing Saturday, Wednesday, and Saturday this series. But no, they did Sunday, Saturday, and then they'll do Saturday again if it happens. Like literally, Mo, like if Dallas beats Vancouver next week, the game in Vancouver is like November 8th or something like that. Really? We're going to have like a 3 week little thing for like to get through one series?
Remember, Gabe, when Seattle played Toronto? It was like in a freaking blizzard. I remember it was like the UFC that night, right? I remember Cub Swanson had a big fight. I'm like watching, like, these guys are freezing their asses off. Like, it's freaking like it was cold.
Well, the MLS Cup is always too late, but
yeah. And that's why they might change the whole calendar structure, right? Going to a traditional European, like from August to next June type of thing here. So.
Yeah, but then they'll be playing in the wintertime too. So,
like, well, I think the plan is they're going to take a break, right, from like mid December to end of January, and try to keep more warm weather games early on in Feb into March.
No,
and then,
no, there's no break. They're just gonna.
That's what they said. They're going to do a German.
The season would be over earlier, essentially, right? Because they're going to be playing outdoors now in more winter months, which is not a good idea.
No,
look, I personally think they should just leave it as a summer league. Like, I don't like the rule. I don't like the schedule change. I think they should leave it as a summer league. The problem is they lose their players all the time. So, like, these teams, the MLS teams, are always losing their players due to international stuff. And it sucks. Like, you know, the Whitecaps played for, like, you know, deciding a top seed the other day. They were missing eight guys, right? So it is stupid. But at the same point in time, now they're going to push the MLS season back. They're going to be going head-to-head with the NHL and the NBA and the NFL now, like just point blank. Like every weekend, you're going to be playing outdoors in cold weather. Like it's not ideal, but they want to get in sync with every other soccer world, this, you know, league, etc. So like,
it also helps with transfers too, right? Because remember, the guys that come from Europe at the end of their year don't really show up till like July, August.
Yeah, exactly. You know, no, but like they want to be on pace with everyone, exactly.
Absolutely.
Like in the European leagues, but we're not a European league. We're a North American league. So like, I don't know, just whatever. It should be a summer league, but I've almost given up because these leagues just do so many stupid things. All right. Good luck, Mo, with your big
thank
day
you
on Saturday.
Yep.
We'll see
hopefully
you
have a voice
tomorrow.
You got it.
I'll see you guys on the grid. Monday night, we got the World Series, Dodgers, Blue Jays, Monday Night Football, Commanders, and the Kansas City Chiefs. Whatever. This football game's a stupid one tonight, but like, I'm into the baseball game tonight, obviously.
Yes, me too.
Other than that, you're on your own. Later.